Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello, my name is Gary Mansfield, and this is a bonus episode of the Ministry of Arts podcast. Now, as ever, let's begin by banging these bongos.
Yeah, right. Crazy.
Hello, hello, and welcome to this bonus episode of the Ministry of Arts podcast. Today I'm going to take you to meet James Volkard. And although we didn't physically meet, we were in the same show last year, which was Art in the Age of Now at Fulham Town Hall. His huge painting, which resonated with me the moment I saw it, will be a topic of the conversation in this podcast. James has got a show coming up, which is between the 23rd and the 28th of March at Asia House. It's called The World Waxed Green, and it's curated by a friend of the podcast, MC Lannis. Now, I don't want to give anything away about this conversation, so I'll take you straight in. Please, come and join me over Zoom as I spoke to James Volkard.
Be quite fun doing it with sort of over a few drinks. I think I did one with MC actually when I first got to know her 8-9 years ago, but anyway, never heard it, so probably not the best.
Yeah, she'd probably blackmail you in a few years' time. Right, well, James, I've got 7 questions that I ask each artist. The first being, how would you explain what you do to someone that doesn't know your work?
Right, yeah, it's tricky because I do so many different sort of things. I sort of work as, you know, as a painter, which is pretty straightforward. But also I've done collage and sculpture. And then, you know, when I have to describe, you know, the collage, it sort of takes a bit of time to explain that. So I suppose I'd probably just say I'm a painter, and then once I start to show people the work, then I sort of get into the detail.
You get asked questions then.
Yeah. But I mean, I suppose it's just exploring lots of different mediums and narratives, and that's what's always sort of driven me on for the project.
You say that you explore various mediums. I saw that one of your mediums was mastic. Is that builder's mastic?
No, I'm not sure if I know what builder's mastic is, but maybe it's from the. I think mastic is actually a tree sap from mastic. Okay. Which I think is related to a pistachio tree.
Okay, that shows my naivety of that medium, doesn't it?
Well, I don't know what builder's mastic is.
It's what they put around windows, like a ceiling.
Well, maybe the word mastic comes from, you know.
It's a very pliable, it's like sort of like really thick treacle, you know?
Yeah, well, it could be, maybe traditionally it was used to put in windows, would make sense actually.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, because when I saw it, I thought, well, I've never seen anyone using that medium in an oil painting before. And obviously not knowing the medium of mastic. Yeah, just showed my naivety in the oil paint world, doesn't it?
Well, I think, it is. It's quite an unusual, it's sort of more traditional, because I had this sort of quite traditional training in Florence, and we were trained and we used these sort of mediums. Canada Balsam was another one. We'd mix it up, and it was a way of kind of glazing into portraits afterwards.
Is mastic what gives you that texture that you've got in your paintings?
I think some of it, it's also, I tend to sprinkle pigment. So I'll lay the paintings flat on a workbench.
Yeah.
And sprinkle raw pigment in onto either an oil surface or a sticky surface. And then that kind of creates the texture, as well as using palette knife and then just glazing. So it's a mixture of all of that. But the mastic, I think it gives it a sort of slightly glossy texture. Essentially it's a varnish, but it's sort of, it's a resin.
Oh, well, okay. You said you were traditionally trained in Florence. Where was that?
There was a school, two schools. I was at a portrait sort of classical realism school called Charles Sasser Studios, which...
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
Sort of a little bit well-known. And then a small sculpture school run by another American sculptor called Studio della Statua, which I'm not sure, you know, he pops up, does the odd course these days, travels the world. Between those two schools.
And how long was you there for?
I did 2.5 years at Charles Cecil, and sort of half a year at the sculpture school. And then I went back, you know, following for 2 summers, once just to, you know, rent a studio and worked on a project for a cathedral in Kenya, being mentored by my old sculptor teacher. And then the other one I was sort of teaching and enjoying myself.
Sounds good. Was it good to go back and teach somewhere that you've studied?
Absolutely. I think it's a really good part of the training as well to teach, because you start to sort of, you know, you're critiquing and also essentially sort of thinking out loud. So when you come back to working on your own paintings or drawings, there's a bit more clarity. It's a very sort of good way of developing, I think, as an artist.
I agree. There's many an artist that I speak to on here that once they've done their training, the university they're studying, and then they go into the studio, that's the one thing they miss, is the other artist being around them. And sometimes if the artist's studio is in a communal studio, if you like, some of them do set up crit sessions there just to keep the hand in, because, you know, having someone else's eyes on your work is quite critical, you know.
Absolutely, yeah. I think having a dialogue is really important. I think that's the sort of curse of an artist being isolated, and then the procrastination, which can be part of the creative process, but can also be, you know, it kind of creates that guilt. And then it can be a downward spiral. I think certainly I struggled with that after coming from a studio where you're sort of surrounded by 30 students to suddenly being alone, also in a big city, which is sort of new and quite daunting.
Yeah. Mind you, saying that, once your studio door's shut, you could be in the middle of a city or up a tree. It doesn't make any difference. It's when you open your door, and then that's when you feel either sort of overwhelmed by your environment or all alone in it, isn't it, you know?
Yeah.
When was your first interest in art, James?
It's as far as I can remember, really. Painting as a young boy for fun. Then throughout school, it was often sort of, you know, the free time. I was always in the art department. And then even the university, I studied art history, but still was painting on the side. So it's always been there and as a sort of constant hobby.
Yeah, were your parents into art at all?
My father's, he was an architect, so quite very creative, and his mother was a professional artist.
Nice.
My mum is actually now going to art school. She goes to a couple of places.
Oh, brilliant.
And it's sort of, taking it up in the last sort of few years, which has been kind of,
And I know this is about you, but what is it your mum's looking at?
I think it's more of just a sort of retirement sort of hobby, but she's doing kind of a figurative painting and a bit of landscape.
Perfect. What a way to retire, eh?
Yeah.
And when was it you realised that you wanted to be an artist?
I think it was actually probably the question more like, when was I deciding maybe I shouldn't be an artist? I remember sort of getting towards the sort of aged 18, thinking, you know, should, you know, do I go to art school? Do I study history of art? You know, is this going to be quite a difficult sort of career to take? And there probably were several moments, I think, then. And then even while I was in Florence, I think there was a moment where I sort of had dinner with my teacher, and he sort of, you know, sort of said to me, you know, it's not an easy route to take. I think it's always been, the attraction's always been there, and just, you know, I suppose the perks of being an artist, you know, the freedom to kind of, you know, travel, but also just explore different narratives. And I think that's always been an attraction. But yeah, it's always been there, sort of that sort of. And I think, yeah, I think that's sort of your passion and commitment to being an artist.
Well, that is the problem with a lot of artists, exactly there, what you said. People are constantly telling you the negative sides of it. And rather than give yourself a long-term goal, you might say, well, I'll do it for a year and see how it goes. And, you know, you're sort of almost giving yourself an end in sight, aren't you, rather than in the distance, you know?
Mm.
Yeah, I know. I've done that myself. When I give up work to be an artist, I said exactly the same thing. We was in the Fulham Town Hall together, the Fulham That's Town right. Hall yeah. show. It was quite overwhelming when you walked past it. Could you explain the painting I'm talking about, please?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a good continuation from what we're just talking about, because essentially it's a painting of me walking around almost like a time lapse in my studio in Barons Court.
Was that your studio?
Yeah, I mean, I've made it slightly larger, so it's a bit more church-like.
Yeah, wow, okay.
And it's the composition is taken from an illustration by Gustave Doré, who is a sculptor and printmaker who illustrated Dante's Inferno. And the illustration is of prisoners walking around in a prison yard. And so I sort of, it kind of resonated with me, and I thought that it would kind of being in that sort of anxious state of being in a creative block, you know, physically, but also walking around circles, but mentally your mind kind of going in circles. And then obviously, soon after actually starting it, I realised that Van Gogh had also done a version of it with himself as one of the prisoners, and also Stanley Kubrick uses that composition in A Clockwork Orange as well.
Yeah,
being sort of used quite a few times by artists, I'm sure.
Well, it was Van Gogh that sprung to mind. His Prisoners Round, when I saw it, and obviously, that, you know, he took that from the same place. But where it was placed first in the Fulham Town Hall, it was placed in a very high but very narrow, more or less corridor, wasn't it? You know,
that's right. And you could
stand maybe, what would you say, 8 feet from wall to wall to look up at. I mean, how big was it? It was probably 6 by 10, possibly.
Yes, but I think from what I remember, 240 by 240 centimeters. So that's maybe 7 by 8.
Yeah, it was. It was very big to be in a small space. But that small space, although the image you was looking at was you walking around in a, as you say, like a very spacious church-like studio. When you're right in front of it like that, it does feel quite claustrophobic. It feels like you're in the room with you, you know. And even where it ended up being shown, it was in a bigger space, a more roomy space. But because it was so close, it still gave you that impression that you was within the painting, you know.
Yeah, well, when I was painting it, initially the figures were sort of full length. So I was sort of, my portraits were much smaller at the front, and it was a bit static. And so I'd sort of started to paint the portrait sort of as I was going around the circle, and then realized that it just wasn't working. So I brought the figures right, you know, much further forward. So essentially, it does look like I'm sort of coming out of the painting or very close to the surface of the painting.
It did give the impression that you was outside, just peering in through a window or through a void, you know. Was you at the show itself?
Yes, I was, obviously in the build-up was there quite a few times, and then went along regularly, I think.
Did you request for it to be moved from one space to the other?
I didn't actually. That was Ben, the creator. He moved it. And I was, yeah, I mean, I was kind of, it, when it was in the corridor, it was, you know, you could stand back and sort of see it getting closer, but it was quite a dark space.
Yeah.
And then when it was in the second space, it still worked, but it was a bit more curated, didn't it?
Yeah.
It wasn't in that room. But that's the first time I've actually exhibited that piece. It's been sort of sat in my studio and I've sort of shared on social media, and it's had, you know, people have responded to it in quite a sort of interesting way, but it's never been on show. But now it's rolled up again in the studio.
So. It's put back away.
Yeah.
Which piece that you've created, James, has got the strongest emotional connection, do you think?
I mean, that one's definitely got a very strong connection. It's sort of very personal.
Yeah.
Painting. I didn't paint it to sell it. It was a project that I wanted to do. It also sort of happened soon after losing my brother. So I already had the idea to do the painting, and then my brother passed away, and then I painted it. So I think there was a lot of emotions going into it. But then I think also landscape. Great. I grew up in Africa, and
whereabouts?
In Kenya.
Yeah.
And so landscape's always been the medium that I sort of return to. And there's, you know, quite a lot of my landscapes where there's a lot of sort of quite sort of powerful lights and sort of African landscape is sort of, you know, you get a sense of the power from. So I, you know, there's one which is of Mount Shompole, which is on the border of Kenya and Tanzania. That's sort of quite a favourite of mine. But then, yeah, even some of the London scapes I've done when I was first moved to London, a bit more sort of abstract. Which I like. But yeah, I think landscape is, there's many landscapes which I really like, and I do feel it's sort of a natural sort of, my creativity really pours out into those rather than perhaps, you know, some of the more experimental pieces like the collages, which is a bit more sort of technical, commercial.
You said about when you moved to London doing abstract landscapes, were they landscapes of the greener spaces or were they cityscapes?
Well, they were more cityscapes. Yeah. So I was sort of painting them in portrait with, you know, vast kind of glass walls. And I think I did one of Brompton Road, of Harrods, and around the city of London, of like the Lloyd's Building, etc. And I really enjoy doing them because, it's, again, you're playing with different texture and light, which I hadn't really had a chance to do before. It had always been sort of more traditional landscapes of being sort of flat and, you know, a distant horizon. These ones were more, you know, a chance to try out a different technique and a different sort of visual aesthetic.
Yeah. Well, you've got a show coming up at the end of March, which is at the... Well, you tell us where it is in the title of it, if you would.
It's on from the 23rd till the 28th of March, and it's at Asia House, which is on New Cavendish Street.
And
it's a series of landscapes again, but again, sort of returning to something different. It's sort of looking at more at forestscapes. So rather than traditionally looking at, you know, a horizon or maybe a street scene, these are sort of close-up sort of foliage, but when I designed them, I was looking, sort of trying to get this feeling of depth by looking through the gaps in between plants and foliage. So I was kind of focusing on the negative spaces when I designed the paintings, which is a sort of there's a sort of Japanese like philosophical aesthetic called ma, which basically translates as negative space. So I was very sort of conscious of the negative space between plants and trees.
The positive space when you're looking through the plants is so close, it's sometimes invisible, isn't it? You know, you are looking through into the distance, the negative space.
Yeah, I think it's actually a natural sort of human sort of reaction is actually to kind of try and find the horizon. So if you sort of create the focus of something to, you know for example, the first leaf you see, without sort of actually getting, you know, the gaps between it, then I think it kind of creates a flat surface.
Yeah. So the landscapes, are they British landscapes?
They're a mixture of Kenya again and Singapore, which is where my brother lives with his family. And I was visiting them before the pandemic. And so it's a mixture, it's sort of half of the sort of Singaporean landscape, or forestscapes around the botanical gardens and
wow,
Creechy Reservoir, which is in the center of the island. And I sort of, you know, took photos and did a few sketches, and then worked kind of during over the last 18 months, have been building up the collection.
Would one be able to notice that they're non-British forestscapes?
I think so, just because of the, perhaps because of the colours, just the sort of shape of the foliage. One of them actually is a landscape I did on Ashdown Forest, which was supposed to be a sort of bluebell type, sort of spring forestscape. And actually I've exaggerated the colours and made it sort of, so they're a bit more sort of luminous, and so it actually looks more tropical.
Yeah.
And that's about these paintings, although they do kind of represent something, they're quite improvised. So I tend to work a little bit from the drawings and photos initially, and then just put those aside, and then it's improvised, and just experimenting a bit.
And these are all oil paintings, I presume?
They're all oil paintings. Again, playing around with different mediums. So again, the mastic and the Canada balsam kind of tie into some of the paintings a lot more than others. I think one or two of the paintings are not painted with linseed oil at all. It's just these sort of glazes.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And yeah, you can see that when you see them up close, you can see the different surfaces, which is sort of kind of interesting, I think.
And how many paintings have you got in the show?
It's a mixture of about 20 paintings, which I'd call more representational paintings. And then there's about another 20 or 30 abstract studies. So I was sort of playing around with smaller studies just to see how the paint reacted, you know, when I was sprinkling pigments and using the different mediums. And I'm going to frame those studies as well. And essentially we're going to curate it. Mario MC is going to curate it. And we're going to sort of create it as an installation. So
nice.
We'll be kind of accompanied by all these abstract studies. And so it'll feel like you're sort of really surrounded by nature when you walk into the room.
Yeah, well, when MC curates an exhibition, she does pretty much put her stamp on it, doesn't she?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. She's great to work with.
And how long have you known MC? I mean, you mentioned MC at the start of this. Having a drunken night recording a conversation.
We first met in Florence. She was out doing a July course, summer course. And I think this is when I was working, so renting a studio, but I was planning to move back to London in August. And then when I got back to London, she was living around the corner from me. She sort of introduced me to few people, to Ben Moore, and sort of worked on the Art Below projects a bit. That was about nine years ago, I think. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. There's another little question that I ask, and it is, if there was you and five other artists past and present, what would your ideal group show be?
I think at the moment I'm getting much more interested in sort of abstract, and I think the scene, you know, the sort of abstract movement in America really interests me, so partly because of the paintings, but also I think, you know, what went on, you know, in the studios, and so sort of maybe like someone like Rauschenberg, Pollock would be in there, but then again like I've do these sort of collages as well, and that's going a bit more kind of poppy. So Warhol has definitely been someone who's been sort of popping up on my radar again and again recently. And I think Picasso would have to be there as well. Hang on, is that probably a couple more? I don't know, again, maybe perhaps someone like Turner or something, because again, I think my paintings are, you know, have been described as Turner-esque.
I can see that.
I would be very interested to have... to have him in the dinner party.
Yeah, that'd all make for a good evening, that's for sure. Yeah. And what would you fancy doing if you wasn't an artist, do you think?
I mean, when I was debating whether it was a sort of sensible career to take. I think I mean, I'm studying art history, so I would have thought maybe I would have worked for an auction house or a gallery.
Yeah.
But then also growing up in Kenya, conservation's been sort of an interest of me for me and my family. I sort of been growing up sort of going on safaris, and you know, very lucky to live on this beautiful small farm just on the outskirts of Nairobi. And we have a sort of an initiative there where we're sort of encouraging trees to be planted. And so I think, yeah, it would be, so many of my friends have stayed in Kenya and work in on conservation projects and conservancies. So,
oh, nice.
I think that probably would have been the other option.
Nice. Yeah. And if you can just give us again the dates of your show, which is called World Waxed Green.
Yeah, the World Waxed Green. It was a bit of an afterthought. I was sort of looking up the symbolism of green, and Osiris is an Egyptian mythological god. And in my book of symbols, it sort of said the world is said that the world waxed green through him.
Nice.
And I sort of just lifted that off.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the World Waxed Green is starts on the 23rd of March till the 28th of March 2022.
If anyone wants to see your work, be it social media or website, where can they see your work?
I'm on Instagram at James Volkard, and the website's jamesvolkard.com. And yeah, my contact details are there if anyone wants to do a studio visit or get in touch about invites for the exhibition.
Where is your studio if they do?
It's in Barons Court. Barons Court is actually, I'm very lucky to be in an old sort of Victorian neoclassical studio on the A4 as you're going in or out of London, just before the Hammersmith flyover. And there's eight kind of old portrait artist studios. And I'm very, very lucky to be in one of those.
Wow, nice. I know exactly the ones. They are stunning.
Yeah, they really are. And the portrait of me walking around in circles, you can sort of see kind of the window.
Oh, okay. Wow. Oh, is that the studio it was painted from?
Exactly, yeah. So
I've never been in the studios, but from outside, yeah, I can see that now.
Come and visit. I'd love to show you.
Brilliant. Good stuff. James, that's all my questions asked, I think. Well, thanks for your time.
And, thank you. Yeah, hopefully see you again soon at the private view. Seriously, if you want to come to the studio, if you're free, I could happy to show you.
It'd be great. I'll take you up on that.
Okay.
I've always wanted to have a nose around them. James, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks a lot, Gary.
Speak soon. All the best, mate. Cheers.
Bye-bye.
If you've got an exhibition or any other creative project within the arts, or even just want to promote your own artwork, you could do that in podcast form similar to the one you've just listened to. They start at a convenient price point that is comfortable for any artist working on a budget. This podcast itself is created by working artists, and we know how important that is. So to find out more information, you can email us on ministryofartsorg@gmail.com or on Instagram at ministryofartsorg. Ta-da!
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.